Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, May 8th, 2025. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, History of the Heartland, Riding Through Decatur History. Historic Preservation Week offers new tours, carriage rides. By Danette Beckett, Decatur. The History of the Heartland Board can always be counted on to find something new in Decatur's past. The organization, with its focus of highlighting the yesteryear of Decatur, has added elements to this year's local Historic Preservation Week list of events. People often drive to St. Louis or Chicago to see similar displays that are right here in central Illinois, said Ann Owens, founder of History of the Heartland. History of the Heartland's mission is to aid in preservation of the historic structures, homes, and the stories of local people, Owens said. Events will begin Tuesday night, May 13th, with an open house at the Lincoln Square Theater. Historic activities will continue on Thursday with the opportunity to visit with former Stephen Decatur High School teachers. Educators come in to really celebrate their legacy and their contribution, said Brett Robertson, president of the History of the Heartland. Six historic museums and homes will be open at various times on Saturday, May 17th. It's a great opportunity to get out on one day and see a bunch of these venues for folks that have never been or want to revisit them, Robertson said. An added feature to this year's events will be a viewing of the Renaissance Church at 432 North Water Street during the Sunday, May 18th, Stained Glass Stories. It's not a stained glass church, but it's a really cool church that I think people will be interested in seeing how they repurposed it and rehabbed it, Owen said. More family fun includes free carriage rides from 10:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Saturday, May 17th, with pickup and drop-off at First United Methodist Church on the corner of North and Church Streets. That will be a ride right around the historic district, Owen said. History of the Heartland will be distributing a commemorative coin at select locations. A Wabash train will be depicted on this year's penny. The Wabash Railroad began as the Great Western Railroad when it reached Decatur from the west in 1855. Wabash remained the largest employer in Decatur for the first half of the 20th century, said the information to be given away with the coin. Each location will have tour guides with a focus on the building or home, as well as the history behind the owners and their families. But you can come asking questions, and we'll do our best to answer them, said Barb Hipple, Secretary for the History of the Heartland Board of Directors and longtime volunteer. Historic Preservation Week activities. Lincoln Square Theater Open House. The Lincoln Square Theater's open house will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, May 13th at the theater, 141 North Main Street. Visitors will be able to see historic elements as well as the renovations. During the open house, free popcorn and samples of pizza baked in their new pizza oven will be given away. Concert posters will be for sale with collector-grade vinyl posters. Stephen Decatur High School Educators Living Legends. The free event is a moderated panel discussion meant to share memories with favorite teachers. Doors will open at 5 p.m., with the program beginning at 6 p.m., Thursday, May 15th, at Doherty's Pub and Pins back room. History Showcase. Tours of historic homes and museums will be on Saturday, May 17th. Each location will have select times and events. The Staley Museum, 361 North College, 10 a.m. to noon, Spring Porch Potting Workshop. Advance registration is required at staleymuseum.com or call 217-422-1212. The Culver House, 412 West Prairie Avenue, noon to 3 p.m., period music and cake and punch will be available. Free donations. The Staley Museum, 1 to 4 p.m., free admission to the museum, donations accepted. The Hieronymus Mueller Museum, 420 West El Dorado, 1 to 4 p.m., free admission to the museum, donations accepted, 217-423-6161. Macon County History Museum, 5580 North Fork Road, 1 to 4 p.m., donations accepted, 217-422-4919. James Milliken Homestead, 125 North Pine Street, 2 to 4 p.m., donations accepted. Governor Richard J. Oglesby Mansion and Museum, 421 West William Street, 2 to 4 p.m., with docent guided tours, donations accepted. Stained Glass Stories Tour, Sunday, May 18th from 1:30 to 4 p.m. This year marks the fourth year for the tour and continues to grow in popularity, including with the addition of the Renaissance Church in the downtown location. This year, two of our local historic churches were getting new roofs and basic repairs. We look forward to them on our tour next year, Owen said. Tour stops are St. John's Episcopal at 130 West El Dorado Street, St. James Catholic Church at 742 East Clay Street, St. Patrick Catholic Church at 407 East El Dorado Street, and Renaissance Church at 432 North Water Street. Historic Preservation Week. For updated information on the Historic Preservation Week events, visit the History of the Heartland Facebook page. This story is accompanied by 5 full-color photos attributed to Joseph Ressler Photos, Herald and Review. The first is captioned, History of the Heartland board member Barb Hipple shares an old photograph of the Governor Richard J. Oglesby Mansion in Decatur on Tuesday, May 6th. Tours of the mansion will be one of the events during Historic Preservation Week. The second is captioned, The Governor Richard J. Oglesby Mansion, which is blue, is pictured in Decatur on Tuesday, May 6th. Tours of the museum will be one of the events during History of the Heartland's Historic Preservation Week. The third photograph is captioned, History of the Heartland board member Barb Hipple gives a tour of the second floor of the Governor Richard J. Oglesby Mansion in Decatur on Tuesday, May 6th. Tours of the museum will be one of the events during Historic Preservation Week. The fourth photo, which shows a portrait of Richard J. Oglesby, is captioned, The Life of Governor Richard J. Oglesby, is one of the topics visitors can learn about during History of the Heartland's Historic Preservation Week. And the last photo shows 2 old books, one on top of the other, and is captioned, Historic artifacts are on display at the Governor Richard J. Oglesby Mansion in Decatur on Tuesday, May 6th. Tours of the museum will be one of the events during History of the Heartland's Historic Preservation Week. Energy. Red Tape Ties Up Solar Future by Nara Schoenberg, Chicago Tribune, Chicago. In Illinois, solar installers often face complex and cumbersome permitting requirements that can add months and hundreds of dollars in cost to the simplest residential roof project, according to a new report from environmentalists and consumer advocates. In some places, installers reported having to submit applications in person rather than via email or an online portal. One installer complained about having to place 6 calls just to obtain a permit that had already been approved. Others say they navigate needlessly complex and drawn-out review processes or face wacky formatting requirements. Among the results, the state is viewed as a very good market because of all the incentives, but an absolute nightmare to operate in, an Illinois solar installer was quoted as saying. Aurora, Elmhurst, and Joliet were among the places where installers reported problems. The report, released Thursday by Environment Illinois Research and Education Center, and the Illinois PIRG Education Fund, calls on the state to streamline the process by adopting instant permitting software, an approach already in place in California and on the way in Maryland. Instant permitting software checks whether a project is compliant with national and local building codes and can approve a permit within a matter of minutes. Options include Solar App Plus, which was developed by the Department of Energy's National Renewable Energy Laboratory in collaboration with building and safety experts and is offered free to local governments. Instant permitting is a pretty easy way to just get more of these small-scale solar projects onto the grid faster, which can add up to a pretty significant amount of energy and ease the load on our grid, said report co-author Theo Rosen, a Climate Campaign's associate for Environment Illinois. The Illinois legislature is considering a bill that would require larger municipalities to offer instant permitting for residential solar roofs. The goal is to have instant permitting included in a larger clean energy bill that will likely be considered this spring, Rosen said. She frames the issue in terms of untapped potential. In the United States, 45% of electricity use could be powered by rooftop solar, she said. But Illinois is only using about 2% of its rooftop solar potential. According to a recent report from the Greenhouse Institute and the Brown University Climate Solutions Lab, instant permitting could spur solar roof adoption by reducing barriers and lowering costs for installers and customers. Instant permitting could lead to an additional 35,000 to 36,000 home solar roofs in Illinois by 2030, and as much as an additional 300,000 by 2040, according to the report from the Greenhouse Institute, a research institute focused on climate change. Those 300,000 solar roofs could eventually save 31 to 32 metric tons of CO2 equivalent, the report said. The rough equivalent of shutting down 8 coal-fired power plants for a year. In addition, the cost of a new solar roof could be reduced by as much as $2,100 by 2030 under instant permitting, and by more than $4,000 by 2040. An 8.6-kilowatt roof, about the median in Illinois, costs about $26,000 before federal and state tax incentives. Rosen's report, which draws from interviews with staff at 9 companies that install residential solar in Illinois, paints a picture of a permitting process that can be long, frustrating, and unpredictable. The interviews were published anonymously because of concerns about the potential for retaliation by permitting authorities. Among the towns and cities where installers said they faced obstacles was Aurora. Solar installer said Aurora moves slowly when it comes to solar permits and is known for being unresponsive with an online permitting system that, quote, frankly, is a joke, quote. A senior employee at a large solar company reported that he has had to go to Aurora in person, a 45-minute drive, just to get a response. He said he had to do that 7 times in the past year. To me, that's a big red flag that something is broken internally. Aurora Chief Development Services Officer John Curley responded that 96% of solar permits in the city are submitted via the online portal, and the vast majority of those users are using the portal regularly. We have additionally been challenging our software vendor to make portal improvements for several years, and they are nearly ready to launch a newer public portal, Curley said in an email interview. Curley wrote that while the average time it takes to get a solar permit in Aurora is 70 days, only 5.6 of those days are due to Aurora reviewing the proposal, with the rest of the time taken up by private sector response and contractor registration and payment. As for the complaint that an installer had to visit 7 times in 1 year to get responses, Curley wrote, "Plan review and inspection results and responses are available 24/7 online. There is never a need to visit in person for this information." In communities such as Elmhurst, installers complained about the use of third-party permit reviewers who aren't municipal employees. Some places you'll submit the application and you get an approval in 2, 3, 4 days, an installer was quoted as saying. But with these third-party reviewers we submit to the reviewer, they take about a week to accept the application, then they receive payment. Once they get payment, they take another week to review. Then they have comments. They send those to us. We respond. Then they take another week to review our response and make us pay. Once we've paid, they take another week to review. And then they have another round of comments and so on. Each round of review takes roughly 3 weeks, and there are often 2 or 3 rounds of comments in Elmhurst, the installer said. It just takes forever. Elmhurst officials did not respond to requests for comment. Joliet was also named by more than one solar company as one of the more difficult and time-consuming jurisdictions to work with, a characterization the city disputes. Our city staff have successfully collaborated with over 100 contractors on various projects, including solar initiatives, and we are proud of our track record, Joliet spokesperson Rose Maria Di Benedetto said in a written statement. The city of Joliet is committed to working diligently and effectively with contractors and businesses every day, offering support and guidance to ensure their success, she said in the statement. Among the complaints about Joliet, the city requires permit applications to be submitted via an online portal that an installer described as confusing, with its own set of crazy requirements. There are a variety of options for instant permitting, including privately developed software, but Solar App Plus is a popular choice. Solar App Plus reduced the median number of days from permit submission to past inspection from 47.5 to 33 in a subset of 2023 cases, according to a June review by the National Renewable Energy Laboratory and Clean Kilowatts LLC. Michelle Knox, owner of Wind Solar USA, a renewable energy developer in Springfield, was one of the installers interviewed for Rosen's report. Knox told the Tribune that she hasn't done residential solar roofs in Joliet, Aurora, and Elmhurst, and that she wasn't quoted regarding those places. Knox said instant permitting would help Illinois solar developers stay on schedule and meet customer expectations, and would reduce the time that understaffed towns and cities have to spend on solar permitting. I think it's a great thing, she said. I think it's a win-win-win. Politics. 2026 elections. U.S. Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy joins Senate race by Brendan Moore. As he burned up the fundraising trail and traveled the state, including a stop in Normal last October, Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy would shut down any question about interest in a state run. There are no vacancies, he would say, heaping praise on incumbent Senator Dick Durbin. But the Schaumburg Democrat is playing coy no more. 2 weeks following Durbin's announcement that he would not seek re-election to a sixth term, Krishnamoorthy on Wednesday made official one of the worst-kept secrets in Illinois politics. He's running for U.S. Senate. The Peoria native cast himself in Durbin's mold as a fellow son of downstate, adding that he spent his life standing up to bullies and fighting for everyday people, while pledging to stand up and fight back against the actions of President Donald Trump and his administration in the Senate. I've made it my mission to fight for families like the ones I grew up with, people who just want a chance to work hard and realize their dreams, Krishnamoorthy, 51, said in a nearly 2.5-minute video announcement. So I'll never be quiet while billionaires like Elon Musk and a convicted felon, referring to Trump, deny the dreams of the next generation for their own egos and personal profit, he said. Krishnamoorthy said he was running to restore women's freedom to make their own health decisions, to keep guns away from people who shouldn't have them, to keep these extremists from gutting vital programs like Medicaid that help people, and to stop the chaos driving up costs. Krishnamoorthy is the third major Democrat to jump in the race. Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton declared her candidacy less than a day after Durbin's announcement, and quickly rolled out endorsements from the state's two top Democrats, Governor J.B. Pritzker and Senator Tammy Duckworth. Representative Robin Kelly, Democrat Madison, launched her campaign on Tuesday. And Representative Lauren Underwood, Democrat Naperville, is also expected to get in the race soon. On the Republican side, Representative Darren LaHood, Republican Peoria, has expressed interest. Krishnamoorthy has spent years laying the groundwork for a Senate run. He has been the most aggressive fundraiser in Illinois' congressional delegation. As of March, he had more than $19 million in his campaign account, dwarfing that of his current and would-be primary opponents. He has also made frequent stops across the state over the past year, from fundraisers for various county Democratic parties to official congressional events well outside the boundaries of his suburban congressional district. The son of Indian immigrants, Krishnamoorthy graduated from Richwood High School in Peoria and later received a degree in mechanical engineering from Princeton University and a law degree from Harvard University. Then I worked on a friend's campaign who showed that Illinois will give you a shot even if you have a funny name, Krishnamoorthy said in his campaign launch video, a reference to his time as a campaign aide for future President Barack Obama. Krishnamoorthy first worked on Obama's failed 2000 campaign for the U.S. House, and later served as policy director for Obama's successful 2004 campaign for U.S. Senate. He was later appointed a special assistant attorney general by Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan to help start the office's public integrity unit. He later served as a deputy state treasurer from 2007 to 2009. In 2010, Krishnamoorthy ran unsuccessfully for Illinois comptroller, losing in the Democratic primary by less than 10,000 votes. In 2012, he lost a primary for a U.S. House seat in Chicago's northwest suburbs to Duckworth by a 2-to-1 margin. But with Duckworth running for Senate in 2016, Krishnamoorthy ran again and won easily. In the House, Krishnamoorthy serves on the Oversight and Intelligence Committees. He's also the ranking member on the Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party. Like Kelly, and perhaps Underwood, Krishnamoorthy will have to give up his seat in the House, an office that is up for election every 2 years, if he moves forward with his Senate campaign. If Krishnamoorthy wins, he would be the first Hindu and second Indian American ever to serve in the Senate. At the conclusion of his campaign video, Krishnamoorthy acknowledged that the name is long, before echoing a line he's used in previous runs for public office. So like always, just call me Raja. Man charged with attempted murder by Tony Reed, Decatur. When Caden M. Britton decided to take revenge on someone who had earlier yelled abuse at him, police say he boldly drove past and opened fire at his target and shot the wrong man. A sworn arrest warrant for the 21-year-old Britton described both him and his pregnant girlfriend as freaking out after he had told her about the shooting on the afternoon of April 20th in the 1700 block of North Church Street. The warrant said Britton had been driving his girlfriend's car, and they had tried hiding it in the garage of a family member because they feared potential retaliation from the shooting. The Decatur Police Department was already hot on their trail, however. Surveillance footage from neighboring homes and information from the city's license plate reading camera system had soon identified the girlfriend's car. And a traffic stop by Mount Zion Police Department in October had provided Britton's information, as he had been driving the car on that occasion as well. Detectives found and arrested Britton Monday night, and he was arraigned Tuesday afternoon in Macon County Circuit Court on a charge of attempted murder. He also faces charges of committing aggravated battery with a firearm and the aggravated discharge of a weapon. Detective Clayton Zills, who wrote the warrant, said the wounded 31-year-old Decatur man had suffered a fractured femur in his left leg from the bullet impact. He had to have surgery from his injury and had a steel rod put into his leg as a result of the shooting, Zills added. The detective said the wounded man had been riding motorcycles on the day of the shooting with a 24-year-old friend who knows Britton. Zill said they had ridden past Britton's girlfriend's home on Edward Street, and Britton had yelled something at them, and the 24-year-old had shouted back some abuse at him. Zill said 10 minutes later, the two men had watched a car that looked like the one belonging to Britton's girlfriend pull onto Church Street, where they had parked their motorcycles. The 24-year-old said he observed a man with his arm out the driver's window, armed with a handgun, Zill said. He said this man then fired three shots at him and the wounded man. He was specifically asked if Caden was the person that shot at them. He would not answer that question and expressed fear of retaliation for snitching. But a family member of the girlfriend who was questioned by police was more forthcoming. He was the one who described them as freaking out and said Britton confessed to the shooting and said he had fired because he thought the 24-year-old was reaching for a gun. Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Scott Reuter, asking for Britton to be denied pretrial release at the arraignment hearing, noted the defendant has previous adult convictions for the aggravated use of a weapon and drug possession, and had also gotten into trouble with guns as a juvenile. Now we have a shooting, he told Judge Lindsay Shelton, after describing Britton's record of criminal activity. It's getting worse. Defense attorney Chidobere Wachukwu described her client as a high school graduate who could be trusted with his freedom. And he is soon to be a father. His partner is 7 months pregnant, she said. Reuter rose to respond, saying he could see little value in allowing Britton out of jail so he can teach his child things like how to aim or how to hold a gun, he added. I would suggest that is not good for the citizens of Macon County and ask that he be detained. The judge agreed, noting the severity of the injuries to the shooting victim and concluding Britton was too dangerous to be granted pretrial release. The defendant will be back in court for a preliminary hearing May 21st, when he is due to enter pleas to the charges. Local briefs. Fundraiser planned for Crone's family, Decatur. A benefit is being held to assist the family of Stephanie Crone, the Decatur woman found murdered in a Long Creek barn. The event, hosted by Decatur, Illinois Pride and Friends of Stephanie Crone, will be from 1 to 6 p.m. Saturday, May 10th, at Slider's Bar and Grill, 5995 U.S. 36, Decatur. It will include live music and drag performances throughout the day. There will be food provided by Bobby Lane's barbecue food truck. The cost for food is $15 for adults and $10 for children. There also will be a silent auction, which will include tickets to shows at the Lincoln Square Theater, baskets from Capelli's and Oakwood Tattoo, and an in-home wine experience. The proceeds will assist with Crone's funeral and burial. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, May 8th, 2025. Please stay tuned.